From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. We continue our conversation with two former representatives who were in La Crosse this week as part of the Congress to Campus program at Viterbo University, Democrat Bill Lipinski and former Republican Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert are both from Illinois and served together for most of their two decades in Congress. Reporter Brad Williams of Wisdom Radio in La Crosse had the first question for Dennis Hastert about current House Speaker John Boehner and recent comments he made saying he hasn't been having a lot of fun as Speaker of the House.
You know, the president has his staff, he has his cabinet. They're all thinking the same way. But when you're Speaker of the House, you're dealing almost on a 50-50 proposition, and you have to find ability to bring people together to get something done. And it's not an easy thing. So, John Boehner's taken on some big issues, and you build a lot of notoriety, and he's had a lot of press time. And John Boehner loves to play golf. He probably hasn't played a lot of golf lately. I don't know. Sometimes you're called to do the things that you have to do, and it's not necessarily fun. You know, I got to know probably every world leader at the time came by my office, and when they were in Washington, and we got to have a sense of a guy like Netanyahu or the Prime Minister of India or Putin or Blair. I mean, they all came. You all sat down and talked to all these guys. But, you know, you also realize they're just people and, the leadership of certain areas. But I guess that's the fun part. But, yeah, that's work, too.
And it's easy to sort of make cheap shots and cheap jokes about Washington. One of the people frequently I've heard doing that is Mike Huckabee, who has radio and TV programs. And on a regular basis, he would talk about Congress, everybody in Congress is an idiot. You can't, it's like, well, everybody in Congress can't be an idiot. People elect them. Is there some frustration on your parts that people do not consider their representatives in Washington to be intelligent people to do the right thing?
It's interesting. The same people that elected him to be governor of Arkansas elected five other people to be members of Congress, so they couldn't all be idiots probably from his logic. But, you know, let me tell you, members of Congress basically are pretty dedicated people. You know, a lot of them are people who are businessmen or lawyers or others that could go out and make much more money than they do serving in Congress. And, but they can do that. And they're just basically good people. Now, you know, Congress is like any other population. You could probably take 5% of them and you wouldn't trust them. And some of that 5% actually get into pretty big trouble. And, that's the headlines that you hear. And everybody paints the whole Congress with the same brush that they paint those three or four or five individuals. Mostly in the state of New York recently. But anyway, it's all there. And that's unfortunate because, you know, the people that I've worked with are good people. They're there. They're committed. A lot of them are there with a servant's heart and try to serve their district and their people. And they do it without a lot of headlines. They just do it every day and hard work. There are people out there that love to grab the headlines and play games. And those are the people, unfortunately or fortunately, you see on TV a lot of the times. But, most of the members of Congress are really good people, and they want to do good things from both parties.
Most people that run for Congress run with a real purpose in mind. They want to accomplish something. They want to do something. It's not that they're running to be somebody, but they have a real purpose in going there. And as Denny says, there's 5% that you can't trust, you can't depend upon, but a vast majority of them are sincere, hardworking people. It's amazing to me that you can get people who are honest, sincere, dedicated, and they have position A. Then you can get somebody that has the same qualifications, and they'll come up with position Z. And you say to yourself, how can this possibly be? These are two people I can sit down with, talk to about sporting events, have a real camaraderie with them. But when you get to this particular issue or that particular issue, they are so far apart you wouldn't believe they came from the same country. But I guess that's human nature.
Sometimes people are so far apart they vote the same. I always thought Dennis Kucinich is probably the most liberal person in the U.S. Congress. Dennis is a friend of mine. I mean, I said sit down and talk to him and spend some time with him and enjoy his discussion. Ron Paul is probably notably libertarian, probably the most conservative member of the Congress. They vote no on everything. So when you look at their voted records, it's almost identical. And so here you have the most liberal person in Congress and the most conservative person in Congress, and basically their voting record is almost identical. It's amazing.
Both of you, after your time in Congress, became lobbyists. Former Representative Lipinski, you worked for organizations representing railroads and public transportation in the Chicago area. And Speaker Hastert, you started working for a lobbying firm that basically covered everything from gambling to electric utilities, tobacco, chemicals. I'm wondering, since people are very critical of lobbyists and the money that they can provide for members of Congress, in your opinion, are lobbyists part of the problem or are they part of the solution?
Somebody wants to build a house and by themselves, and they're not necessarily carpenters or masons, but you get a book and you read or you ask somebody advice. And basically, lobbyists are people who can bring and advise members of Congress about issues, give them background. What some people want to do is Congress actually act in a vacuum. And probably if you're in a vacuum, you're probably not making very good decisions. Now, the rules for Congress are very tough. You know, when I was there, you could actually take some trips and go see some things. And if you wanted to know what we're doing in the secret testing grounds out in Nevada, you could go take a look. Today, you're pretty limited. You can't even get on a plane and go anywhere and take a look at things. So, you know, you have to have knowledge. You have to have background. Lobbyists have one thing that they can trade on. That's their credibility. And if they don't have credibility, they aren't lobbyists long. But a lobbyist is a person that presents a point of view. But it's a credible point of view, and it might be point-counterpoint type of thing. Now, you know, I don't do a lot of lobbying, and I got in this – it's actually a law firm, so I'm a senior advisor to this law firm. But they do a lot of energy things. And I really felt that what we do in energy policy in the next 30 years will depend on how we can be competitive in the world. And so I like that. That's a lot of the work that I've worked on. We've worked on desalinization issues. Because water is a big issue, especially in places like California and Texas and Florida. So these are fun things for me to do, and I enjoy it. And it's a way to use my expertise that I've built up over those years to help move policy forward.
Most of the companies that I work for are mass transit companies, railroads, and many of the things that I try to do for them were the same things that I was trying to do when I was a member of the House of Representatives.
Because you were a member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee.
That is correct. There was a program that I put forward called CREATE. Has to do with railroads and straightening out an awful lot of railroad tracks that go through the city of Chicago. And I was the one that came up with the idea. I'm the one that put the legislation together. Unfortunately, the bill didn't move until after I left, but it did move nevertheless. Today, I still work on that, and I work on that on behalf of several different entities that I work for, trying to move that forward, trying to get state money, trying to get more money out of the railroads, trying to get more federal money for it. And as far as mass transit, I was probably the champion worker on behalf of the Chicago Transit Authority and Metra, which is the commuter rail system. I forget the year, but between Denny Hastert and I, we managed to find about $750 million that was not spent in behalf of mass transit, and we managed to put all that money together and bring it back to the Chicagoland area for Metra and for the city of Chicago, Transit Authority. And those are the type of things I work on. Lobbying, I do very little lobbying. I do more advising my clients on how to go about things and also in talking to friends of mine who were friends of mine when I was in Congress, asking them to be more supportive of things that my clients are interested in. The ironic thing about it is that there's only one entity that I approached to be a consultant lobbyist for. It was an entity in the Chicagoland area who I had done an enormous amount for when I was in Congress. And unfortunately, they turned me down because they said they already had lobbyists and consultants. And it was the only entity I approached. They turned me down. Everyone else that I have as a client actually came to me without any solicitation for me. It's another one of those unique things in life.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guests today are retired Representative Bill Lipinski. He's a Democrat from Illinois who served from 1983 to 2005. We're also joined by former Representative and former Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert. He's a Republican from Illinois. He served from 1987 to 2007 and for 8 years was Speaker of the House. Speaker Hastert, you were Speaker between Newt Gingrich and Nancy Pelosi, and you were a Speaker during and following the September 11th attacks. I'm wondering if you can talk about your legacy as a Speaker during those 8 years.
You went from a peacetime Speaker on September 11th, 2001, where you're worried about education, you're worried about health care. I did a lot of health care legislation in years previously becoming Speaker. Highway bills you were trying to do, mass transit, all these things that were people type of things. You went on after September 11th, all of a sudden we had 3,000 people that were instantly killed, murdered in this thing, travesty that happened. You had to get New York City running again. The stock markets were down. AT&T building was right next to World Trade Tower was basically destroyed. And so you had to get communications up. You had to rebuild the subway system. Washington, D.C., you had to get the Pentagon back. You had to take care of the survivors of the 3,000 casualties. So those families, and without going through a really nasty, tough time with the courts and suing everybody to get money. So, you know, we did all those things taking care of people. In order to, you know, the airlines were basically down. You couldn't take an airplane. The airplanes weren't flying. Why? Because no airline would put an aircraft up in the air unless they had anti-terrorism insurance. And because they never had to worry about it before 2011. But every airline, every aircraft has anti-terrorism insurance. We had to create it. We had to write legislation to make it happen. Nobody would rebuild or reconstruct the buildings in New York unless they had anti-terrorism insurance. Why? If something happened, they didn't want to be held liable because they didn't put a beam here or this kind of a window here. And so we had to create this whole anti-terrorism and be the government had to be the reinsurers for it. So we created things. We knew that there was 20 cells of Al-Qaeda throughout this country. I think that's public knowledge now, but we knew it. How do you find who they are and who they're contacting? We did the Patriot Act, which was very controversial. But we're still having it today, even in the Obama administration. They've kept it because we need to find out. We needed to give our FBI and CIA and others the same power to find out who these terrorists were as we gave them to find out who the mafia was. It's almost identical information. You know, that was not popular stuff, but you had to do it. And I remember we spent about 9 months out of my office with Democrat leadership, both in the House and the Senate, and Republican leadership in the Senate in our office. We worked through this legislation. And, you know, we redid Homeland Security. We had 26 agencies that had little pieces of Homeland Security. We put them together. It was the largest reorganization of federal government since after World War II, and they reorganized the Defense Department. We did a lot of things that we had to do. So I guess that, in a sense, was a legacy. But let me tell you, you know, I had to make some tough decisions that day. We were supposed to have John Howard, who was the Prime Minister of Australia, do a joint session of Congress that morning of the attack. I was in my office early. We were in session already. I saw the first two attacks, and then, of course, trying to get a hold of the vice president, but he was in the basement of the White House trying to get all the planes down with Norm Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation at the time. And we didn't connect. And I was trying to connect, and I pick up my phone. And there was a guy on the other end of the phone and says, "What in the world are you guys in Washington doing? Taxes are too high." And I said, whoa, who is this? He said, "Never mind who this is. Who in the hell is this?" And I said, "I think you got the wrong number." I hung up. As I hung up, I looked up my window, which looked right down the mall in my office, and I saw that black smoke coming across the mall. and knew, you know, something was wrong, not supposed to be there. And a staffer came in a minute later and said the Pentagon had been hit. And so I knew I had to make a unilateral. Nobody ever stopped Congress before on a unilateral decision, but we had to do it. And I did it. I just decided. I picked up the phone. A guy named Porter Goss was presiding over the House. When it happened, he ended up being the director of CIA eventually and said, Porter, we need to close down. We don't know what's going to happen. To make a long story short, you know, I went out on undisclosed location. We came back that night and had a press conference and said we're going to open up Congress. We found out through the Massawi hearings that when I was making that decision, there were 10 or 7 or 8, we really don't know how many people, with a couple pots of scalding coffee, hot water from the coffee maker on that plane and the utensils from breakfast that took down those 5 terrorists. They defeated those 5 terrorists, took the plane down because they knew that the plane was headed back to Washington, D.C. Everybody was watching TV. That plane was a little bit late, and people had the airphone on, and they were talking to their relatives and friends and knew what happened in New York and in Washington. After the Massawi hearings, we knew that that plane was headed for the capital of the United States. So when I was standing there making this decision, if that wasn't been for a delay, we would have had that plane in the front door of the Capitol. I always think we have great people who are real heroes in this country. People are firemen, policemen, the people who went up the trade towers and tried to save people and perished. You know, our men and women that serve this country in uniform are great. But we also have heroes that you don't know about. We have heroes that are sitting across from you in an airplane or across the room in a restaurant. But when the time comes to act, you know, Americans have always been able to do that. And I couldn't, for the next 6 years that I was speaker, I couldn't stand there and look out that window without thinking of those people on that Flight 93 who, because they did what they did, basically saved that plane from coming into the capital of the United States. It's very sobering. I guess that's the legacy.
And Representative Lipinski, I don't know if you want to talk about your time pre and post 9/11 or if you want to comment on the speaker's legacy.
Well, I think the speaker's legacy is really one that it was our last best chance of bringing comedy back to the House of Representatives. I don't know how we're ever going to do it because I say the deterioration of getting along together, working together, started with Newt Gingrich in his special orders when he would get up on the floor and go after the Democrats at special orders when nobody else was there except his friend Bob Walker, who would agree with everything that Newt had to say, and they would say, and there's not a Democrat here that'll stand up and defend. And, of course, there were no Democrats there because it was special orders. Congress had closed down. It started then when the Republicans took over under Newt Gingrich, and they probably would not have taken over if it hadn't been for Newt and Newt's tactics with special orders and other things. The Democrats turned, and they became just as outlandish, just as ridiculous as the Republicans under Gingrich had been with their special orders. I think when Denny became Speaker, because of his ability to get along with all people and his willingness to sit down with the other side, we had a chance to get back to the days when Tip O'Neill was the Speaker, when Bob Michaels was the Republican leader, where the two parties worked together. Yes, the Democrats were in charge, but they always made sure in those days that the Republicans had some input into legislation. It doesn't happen today. It certainly didn't happen under Nancy Pelosi. John Boehner, I like John Boehner. John Boehner's a smoker. I was a smoker. He and I used to go out in the balcony and smoke together and moot cigarettes off of one another. I think John is a very nice guy. John tried to cut a deal with the president where taxes would be increased somewhat, and they would, I believe, come up with $4 trillion in deficit reduction over the course of 10 years. He went back to his caucus, and they were not going to buy any kind of tax increase whatsoever. So he had to go back, and he had to tell the president that was the case. By the same token, I doubt seriously that if Obama had gone to the Democratic caucus and said, these are the cuts we're going to make in Medicare, these are the cuts we're going to make in Medicaid, I doubt that he would have had too many followings either. That's, the parties are so far apart. That's what I believe Denny's legacy is that he tried, it didn't work out, but he was our last best hope. what is going to bring us together? I don't know. We've been, you know, we've had 9/11. We've been fighting two wars in the last 10 years. We had this horrible downturn in our economy. And to me, instead of bringing Americans together, it just drives them further and further apart. For the first time in my life, I say I'm really concerned about the future of this country.
And both of you are here in La Crosse visiting Viterbo University as part of the Congress to Campus program. What impression are you trying to leave with these college students?
I think to encourage them that, you know, that there is some good science of politics. And also, we're talking to history classes and economics classes. I happen to think there's nothing you do in politics that doesn't have an economic consequence. And there's nothing in politics that doesn't have, you know, vice versa. Or nothing you do in economics doesn't have a political consequence. So I think trying to encourage those people to cross, get a broad of education as possible. I think anybody that specializes so hard in one side, they really don't get a broad perspective on what life is about. And that I think it's important for students, especially, to see people who are politicians or were politicians. They're just real people. I mean, we got good parts to us, and we got probably some unhappy parts to us, but here we are. And this is, and they, you know, we're just ordinary people. Bill grew up, his dad was a bus driver. I grew up, my dad lost his business in the 1960s and went to a different kind of business. I worked my way through college. We're just like everyday, like them. And that, you know, if you really want to do something, I think this is a country where you still can make your goals and your values and your dreams come true.
I'm trying to motivate people to get more involved in politics and government. I'm also trying to get them to realize that we need people who can think for themselves, who will come to their own conclusions, that they should not be led by the news media or other individuals in politics who take very extreme positions. That's one of the hopes that I have for the country, is that we can get a new group of political people who today are still far away from being elected to any public office into government, and they will be more willing to sit down and try to be Americans rather than be Democrats or Republicans.
Democrat Bill Lipinski and Republican Dennis Hastert are both former congressmen from Illinois who are in La Crosse this week talking with Viterbo University students as part of the Congress to Campus program. I'd like to thank WISM Radio reporter Brad Williams for helping ask questions. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Stroop, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.